Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dog Pod, your original podcast covering the 9-0 fifth-ranked Pac-12 leading Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Law Dog and Mitch, fresh off our return from the annual Dog Pod roadshow to the Coliseum this year. Hey, we're going to look back at UW's 52-42 win over USC and prep you for our 12:30 showdown with number 18 Utah this Saturday, 12:30 Husky Stadium. Gentlemen, we're all buckled up, man. You ready to go?
My voice is still in recovery, BT, but I'll be here.
Ooh, I lost a lot. Hey, man, look, this was our annual trip. I think we ended up purchasing close to 104 tickets all up for various groups of Husky fans, all behind the Husky bench between 104 and 110 in the Coliseum. Mitch and I, part of our big dad and kid trip, where a bunch of us brought our kids down there to the game and converted a bunch of Husky fans. I'll say pregame thoughts, a couple things. So we headed in there, headed into the game. One thing I was worried about, and wasn't a big deal, traffic, man. We didn't hit traffic at all coming in. This was like not like 520. Went right off their freeway, got right into the green parking lot.
How was exactly it getting out of there?
And it was fine.
Getting out of there,
getting out of there was less awesome, but getting in was great. Hey, and a big shout out to Tailgated. You know, we like to see what the local tailgate is, and obviously there's the one out there that's the most famous, the Psycho Gate. Roy from the Psycho Gate, a guy who has not missed a USC Trojans home or away game. And I want to say 1920 years is his streak.
1992, he said.
1990. No, it's okay. We're going 30 plus years. He's been to every single SC home and road game, which is pretty impressive. Incredibly welcoming. And I will say, especially for like a very adult tailgate, and we brought a bunch of kids who are like, you know, my kid is like hot. He's not used to the weather. He's like sitting on the beer cooler. So every time an SC fan wants a Coors Light, my kid has to like stand up. You know, she's like sweltering. And I thought like they were very welcoming. Vic, the steak man, he cooked 50 steaks for us. And it was great. I mean, not only a great steak, definitively the best steak I've ever eaten off of a parking lot floor.
And with plastic silverware, I assume.
And with plastic silverware, but once you got it,
if you could find it,
if you could find it, once you got it cut up, man, that was a great steak. So thank you. And then we hit the Washington warm up. But I'll just say, on the way in, shout out to the UW Alumni Association. The Washington warm up was a absolute rager. I mean,
epic
music. I mean, the lines were long because it was so packed. But if you were walking by that, it was like, wow, okay, UW is getting after it. And then, of course, headed into the game. And we'll talk about not only the game, but all and everything that we thought about the Coliseum. But any other pregame thoughts, guys?
You know, it just made me appreciate more and more our tailgate scene and being on the water and having grass. And like, oh, my gosh, it was like 85 degrees on the concrete hardtop. And, you know, like it was just amazing. It makes you appreciate like it. We truly do have one of the greatest experiences in college football, man.
Oh, yeah. I think that was like a hot Labor Day North Lot experience. You might get something like that, maybe like one weekend out of the year. But you're right. Very different.
I was able to strike up a conversation with a couple of co-eds on my way in, and I was asking them, hey, where is the tailgating? And they said, well, it's just kind of all over. It's sprinkled all over the place. I think that does make, you know, our special setting at Husky Stadium so great. But just also additional thoughts, like the LA Coliseum, I didn't really have a lot of expectations about it, I guess. Maybe I should have, but I was just blown away. I thought it was so cool, the history. I took a photo of all the, you know, the Olympiad records and stuff. They had big placards. They had placards of college football legends like Newt Rockne and stuff in the museum kind of section of the entrance there underneath the torch. It was a really cool experience. It's Husky Stadium is ours. It's our thing. And I think we all love it, but it was cool to experience the Coliseum and just really take it in.
You forget about all the history there and how neat it was. And we, you know, one of my, best friends from our football for Sinaloa camp that I played with, Jorge Cruz, came up with his wife. His wife was an Olympian, held the triple jump record in Mexico for a number of years. And she'd competed in there. I was talking about how it was set up for, you know, when they have Olympic, class and world, track and field athletics, like how it was set up for triple jump. And I think you forget about that, of like how iconic this place is and how many
great things. Well, and the Olympics are coming back.
Olympics are coming back to LA. Ready.
And it's gonna be the first stadium to host 3 Olympic games.
And we got to get into the game before we do that. Well, the one thing I will shout out is, okay, Husky Stadium concessions. Can you go to the Coliseum and take a lesson? How short were those lines?
What lines?
Not just nothing. Mm-hmm. Walk up three deep, plenty of room, turn it over product, like just great. Man, love that. But hey, there was a game to play. Let's get into it.
It got off to a fast start, didn't it? SC getting the ball, moving it down the field at the UW 15. Caleb Williams goes to Brendan Rice in the end zone, draws the pass interference, and the Trojans punch it in from the goal line, take a 7-0 lead. UW comes right back, moves it down the field in 10 plays. Dylan Johnson getting 4 carries on this drive, and the fourth one hitting pay dirt.
Johnson, he just waltzes in. Penix and the Huskies and Sir Caleb Williams and the Trojans, each quarterback 5 for 5 in the opening drive.
He's a lot to the table. Watch the big man right here on a short yardage play. Look at that left side. You talk about physicality, getting low, having some power.
It was the theme of the night, right? The teams actually trade 3 and outs here, guys. Think back to the first quarter here. We trade 3 and outs. And then Washington's only punt of the game. Of course, the Trojans block it. And then it only takes them 2 plays to punch it in from the 8. They take a 14-7 lead. But characters of the Huskies all season, they come right back after this. After a ridiculous penalty for participation without a helmet.
Oh, come on. Just stop. I know.
Huskies were looking at 3rd and very long from the USC 22.
18. Empty set here for Penix. Let's see what Magic Mike can pull out of his hat here. He goes drops 20. Back to pass. No real pressure. Now here it comes. He spins away from it. Penix rolling out to the left. Looking downfield. Looking. Tries to keep the play alive. Throws to the end zone. Caught! Devin Culp! Did he hold on? Waiting for the signal. 2 arms out. Touchdown! A phenomenal throw from Michael Penix. Another Heisman resume moment. And Devin Culp with the catch of his career pulls the Huskies within a point.
There's something about number 83 and how he does that. But you said it, Magic Mike. Wow. Rolls to his right, holds in the play. They drop 8, spins to his right, feels the pressure, spins back to his left, extend the play to his left, Tony, and then suddenly find number 83, Devin Culp, arms up to the sky, and to hang on to it, both feet in bounds. My goodness.
Pins the ball to his own helmet, a la David Tyree. Wow. I mean, just unbelievable. And what a job extending the play by Michael Penix on 3rd and 18.
What a play.
Culp highlight reel for life right there.
And I mean, listen to that crowd noise. There was some serious crowd noise, right? Okay, this one, it was a track meet, particularly in the first half, right? So the Huskies have it tied up at 14. 2 long runs put USC right in position to take a 21-14 lead on a Devin Barlow touchdown run. Then the Huskies come right back, and it was just before this play. I turned the guy next to me and said, Dylan Johnson, he's having a nice game. He needs to break a long one here. And he does. 52 yards to the house. Ties it at 21. But Caleb Williams' magic, it was just getting started. Remember that terrific spin move he makes here to pick up 14 on the next ensuing drive? Then 4 plays later, he finds Taj Washington for a 41-yard touchdown to make it 28-21 USC. I mean, were you nervous? I was pretty nervous at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be outdone. Penix finds Polk and Adunze for long gains here toward the end of the first half. Then Dylan Johnson gets stopped at the 4-yard line. USC calls timeout to preserve some clock with just over a minute left, which allowed the Huskies to dial up a play for the end zone.
Empty set. Michael Penix out of the shotgun. 3-by-2 set. Claps his hands, takes a snap. Penix stays cool in the pocket, fires a fastball. Caught! Touchdown, Jalen Polk. Sat down right on the post and takes in a touchdown pass from Michael Penix, his 2nd of the ball game and 26th of the season. And Michael Penix threw a dart to big play JP to pull the Dogs within a point with 1:14 to go in the first half.
Yeah, he's coming alive, JP. Wow.
Little time left, though, right? The Huskies kick it back to Caleb Williams. And then one of the plays of the day on the first play from scrimmage right here.
Eddie Lafoscio, Alfonso Tupitala are the linebackers. Williams goes empty set. Pressure coming off the edges. Williams rolls out past ETF, gets grabbed, lost the football, down on the ground, and Braylon Joyce has it for the Huskies. It was jarred loose by Zion Tupuola-Fatui, and Braylon Joyce pounces on it. A costly turnover for USC.
I mean, what a play.
ZTF coming up big right there. And the D-line, frankly, I mean, I thought they had a pretty good game in terms of pass rush. They just couldn't kind of finish the job against Williams too many times, but they were very disruptive.
We'll get into this, I think, later. But, like, with everything that's going on in ZTF's life, to get that happen in that moment, so cool for him.
Yeah, Softy came up to our group after the game and was just talking about how he had tears in his eyes, and then that interview kind of got played around. And I mean, what a moment. Huskies punch it in here, though, with another Johnson touchdown. They take their first lead of the game after that turnover, and it's 35-28 at the break. They were starting the ball with the second half coming out of the locker room. It felt like they were finally maybe going to take control of the game here. They're driving down the field, but Penix throws up that ball toward Rome, gets tipped. Intercepted.
Oh, jeez.
The Trojans are able to march it down the field again, tied up at 35. Another Williams pass, this one to Brendan Rice. The Huskies come right back, though. Penix gets the call on the goal line this time to punch it in. The Huskies are back on top, 42-35. And Williams, I mean, he just would not be denied here. He finds another Williams, Mario, in the end zone to tie this one up at 42 on a long pass. And we're approaching now that fourth quarter at 42-42. This is the key, I thought, right here. I mean, the Husky defense and just the whole team stepping up here. Huskies are driving again, 3rd and 9 from the 19. Penix takes a sack by Eric Gentry, Lofa Tatupu's boy.
Called out, yeah.
But the Huskies were able to stay in field goal range there, put a feather in that one. We're going to come back to that. Grady Gross knocks down the field goal. Huskies are on top, 45-42. It obviously felt precarious here with about 8 minutes left. But the Husky defense stepped up. Trojans broke a couple of nice runs and drove down to Husky territory. And then from the 20-yard line, SC gets the holding penalty, okay, on 3rd and 7, pushing them back. And then on the replay of the down, 3rd and 13, Caleb Williams tries to get out of the pocket, but Foy Tanufi with the sack of fear finally gets to Williams, finally drags him down, and puts him out of field goal range. I mean, that was just such a huge play. It's exactly what this team needed. And with that much time left, Lincoln Riley didn't have a lot of great choices here. But we see why Lanning opted to go for it in these situations with Oregon, right? Because the Huskies got it back, and on the first play.
A long march to perhaps secure the game if they can reach the end zone. Johnson on the pitch. Gets the drive started with a big chunk play. It's a foot race. Dylan Johnson finally shoved out of bounds at the 35, 53 more.
Watch the blocks by center out here. A great block on the outside by Jalen Polk right there, too. 73 gets out there. All the receivers and Dylan Johnson having a night you can dream about.
Well, I mean, just an ode to DJ's night.
It felt incredible. Like they had iced it there, even though it was still only a 3-point lead. But Johnson finally does get the call to punch it in and clinch it. 52-42 Huskies, their 13th win ever in the L.A. Coliseum in 100 years, boys. And pandemonium in the Southeast bleachers.
Oh, let's hear it. And then, that last play. Tony Caster, should we hear his call? For great Tony.
Yeah.
Huskies going for the win right here. Williams out of the shotgun. 47-yard line of Washington. Takes a snap. He's back to pass. Williams, pressure coming. Throws up the left sideline. Incomplete. It's incomplete. The Huskies are going to get the football back. And the Dogs are going back to Seattle at 9-0. The Huskies are still national title contenders after a trip down to the Coliseum. And the Dogs will get ready for Utah with a record of 9 wins and 0 losses.
So proud of this Husky football team.
I think we're all thinking the same thing.
No, I mean, I've been on 36 road trips, boys. 36 Husky road trips. That one takes the cake. Number one.
What a finish.
I mean, it was amazing. It was such a great experience. I mean, the Goodyear blimp is above us. The Husky crowd is fired up. It's a back and forth game. Wow. What an amazing experience. And then how about our crew being front and center when Penix comes up at the end of the game and they're in a bunch of like the pictures in the Seattle Times of the kids, all that kind of stuff. It was so cool. A couple of kids got Penix's wristbands and his towel. It was so cool.
Just memories for life. We even had one of our local buddies who, you know, lives down in the LA area and brought a classmate who, you know, never, where is Washington, what state's it in? And you know, Vance's daughter, Zoe, brought a Frinkelette, and at the end was like, I'm a Husky for life. This is like, that's what kind of makes your memories like that, where you find people that 30 years later are Husky fans. You say, why? It's because they have that memory.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was incredible. And just, you know, the magnitude of the game. I mean, the USC was the preseason conference favorite. Caleb Williams has the Heisman Trophy sitting on his mantle somewhere. You know, and maybe a little of the luster had come off of the Trojans in the last few weeks. And, you know, maybe it wasn't the magnitude that we were hoping for. But I think, you know, for the Huskies, it means the world. Getting to 9-0, getting through that hurdle, place that's been really tough to play over the years.
A couple thoughts on that, which, you know, look, it was billed as a sellout. And if I was surprised, and no disrespect to the USC fans, but how quiet it was on third down.
Yeah.
And there, you know, the USC announcer saying, hey, third down, Trojans, let's hear. And it was like, like, really? Like, you could just turn and have a conversation with the person next to you. It wasn't like, this isn't like when we've gone to Utah and Oregon and all these other places where, and Husky Stadium, where third down, you can't hear yourself. They just, and I don't know, part of it maybe is the stadium setup or that the year, look, they came into this, what were they, number five preseason? And the year has not been what they thought it was. You know, they fired their defensive coordinator after the game. And so maybe they're just not into it. But I've heard from others that, like, it's an issue. You know, it's an issue. Maybe it's an LA thing, but they just weren't loud. Kudos, I will say. I feel bad saying this. No disrespect to the Husky band. That's the best college band I've ever heard. I love that Trojan band. I think their song list is great. The way they have them set up right behind the end zone, like all of that stuff is classic. I really like the band. I thought the band was good.
It's so funny you say that because everyone was talking about how annoying it was. And I was thinking to myself, like, this is exactly what a college band and just like the pageantry of it. You know, I actually found myself going to Spotify and like, okay, let me see what that song is called. And you know, that they never like stop playing, right? It gets a little quiet sometimes, but then the drums are going and it's it's pageantry. It's college football.
They
wove it into the gameplay really nicely as well, right? Like they really had it down. And you know, guys, I was with my daughter and she was like, what is that song? It is so annoying. She could not get it out of her head. It was so funny for like, and then I heard her humming it the next day.
Oh, yeah. It's a catchy, tribute to catchy. Troy. Tribute to Troy.
It's a catchy tune. It was, you know, and on a night where, look, I think when Cam Davis went out this year and we thought, oh man, I remember I having a pot preview pots, like, who's our running back? We're in trouble. Who's our running back? We don't know about this Dylan Johnson. And to have him come out like that, you know, when we thought that everything was going to be shoot, it's going to be Rome and J-Mac, 80% of the touches. We knew JP was going to be like that third guy. But JP right now, I mean, wow, where would you be without this guy? To have Giles Jackson come in and make some critical, critical plays. You know, this has been, and guys that come in where ZTF losing his father this week and coming back to play and having that emotional night. So incredible. Julius Boello, what a game. What a game for that offensive line to have him come together. Grady Gross, just money, just nails, absolute nails. So, you know, I think we could talk a little bit more about some of the things that did happen. I would say, you know, it was a night you saw like, hey, Cam Fab was out there. Vince Nunley was out there. I think they played 7-8 snaps each. You know, yeah. So you saw him doing a lot of weird things where they were shifting around with almost like, you know, three pulling in an extra corner. So they didn't really have that real deep safety that we really should have. And, you know, and still you saw some people like you saw USC picking on the same guys they're picking on. They're picking on Elijah Jackson, right?
Yep.
They're picking on Mikel Esteem. That's who they're going after. And, you know, look, let's be fair, with some success. So that's a concern kind of going forward, but a lot of standout performances as well.
Yeah,
you know, I would say one more thing is just I think what I'm getting more and more excited about with this team is that it really does feel that when the lights get brighter, they're really stepping up.
Step up.
Like whether it's the senior leadership or the coaching, you know, like I just feel like they're rising to the challenge, which is exciting. And they're doing it in different ways, right? Like the run game, the offensive line this time around. It was just super impressive to see, you know, how they really stepped up, which gives me some pretty good faith that going into this stretch run, right, they're going to need it. They're going to need all that. So it's heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
This is a different team. You know, than what we are used to in the Peterson era. It's just a completely different thing. I mean, when we have the ball, we are lethal. We are lethal and dangerous, and teams don't want to kick the ball to us ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just find a way to outscore teams. You know, a couple of stops is really all it was in that game. It was a punt in the first quarter, and it was a sack on third down in the fourth quarter. And that was pretty much all you needed. And that huge strip sack fumble. So, you know, it's taken me a while to get used to it. It's a little bit hard to watch, but as good as this offense is, they're as good on offense as the 91 Huskies were on defense. I mean, that's what it is.
That's a good comparison.
We have an elite dominant offense that, you know, that is very difficult to stop. And you finally see it kind of coming back and clicking on all cylinders after a couple of weeks of maybe they were ill. Maybe there were some ill effects from, you know, an Oregon game or emotional effects, whatever it was. You saw them back and clicking on all cylinders.
You sure did. Look, and a place where wins have been few and far between for most teams, and especially for the Huskies in the Coliseum. So great to get one. All right. Hey, Lotta, talk to me about Litz before we get into this Utah game, man. SC's got some traditions. Why don't you give us the cliff notes on this SC team?
These are not the cliff notes, BT, but I got to tell you. Okay. But you know, we've been running back the Wayback Machine on some of the historical notes on some of our Pac-10 brothers and Pac-12 brothers. We cannot forget the USC Trojans last week. Obviously, we had a special episode with Lovitz Tupu, but I wanted to just talk about some of this history because it is kind of incredible, right? You know, USC starting playing football in 1888. Their early history, pretty unremarkable, and the school even dropped football from 1911 to 1913, as many schools did. But everything changed after World War I in 1919 when USC hired Gloomy Gus Henderson from Seattle, Washington, boys, where he coached at Broadway High School. That campus, now known as Seattle Central Community College, just a few short miles from Husky Stadium. Gloomy Gus has the best winning percentage in USC coaching history, and he won 45 of 52 games, including the first Rose Bowl victory over Penn State on New Year's Day, 1923. So, in a sign of things to come, though, Henderson's contract was not extended because he could not defeat Cal. So, the Trojans brought in a little-known coach named Howard Jones. This was also about the time the USC was accused of paying players by their in-state rivals, Cal and Stanford. And Cal even refused to play the Trojans in 1925, which is the only year that these schools did not play between 1920 and 2020. Incredible. But Gloomy Gus Henderson, also remembered for one other important contribution to USC football, the USC-Notre Dame rivalry. So as we discussed, Notre Dame defeats Stanford in the 1925 Rose Bowl, and they claim their first consensus national title, raising their profile, raising their brand, and the money starts to roll in. But due to the Irish's own kind of checkered history with the Big Ten, they were Catholic, they had those shaky academic standards back at that time, they had some trouble scheduling regular games. So the Rose Bowl committee attempted to lure Notre Dame into an annual game in California, but the members of the PCC boys own the Rose Bowl. You got to remember, they owned it at that time, and the men of Cal and Stanford didn't want anything to do with the Catholic school from the Midwest, so they rejected it. USC, though, accepted the challenge. Gloomy Gus Henderson said, we will take an annual game with Notre Dame, and in 1926, the Trojans play the Fighting Irish for the first time, and an annual tradition is born. Okay, Howard Jones, though, is taking over the Trojans at that time, where he came from Yale, played for the legendary Walter Camp, and in 16 years with the Trojans, wins the PCC seven times, takes the USC to five Rose Bowls, winning all five, and four national titles that are claimed by the Trojans during that time. And, I mean, Jones's run at USC really set the standard for the Trojans and provided that measuring stick for all of their future coaches, right? And, in fact, I looked this up. There were 13 coaches who have been in charge at USC for 20 games or more since 1922 when they joined the PCC. 10 of those 13 won at least one Rose Bowl in their first few seasons. And of the three who didn't, not one of them survived to the end of year four. So this was, if you don't win the Rose Bowl at USC, by year four, you will be gone. I mean, that's what happened. So after the Jones era ended in 1940, the Trojans still kind of, you know, won six conference titles over the next 20 years, but they couldn't beat Notre Dame. Just three wins over Notre Dame between 1941 and 1961. But this was part of this became the USC formula, right? They were dominating on the West Coast. Their plan needed to be to win the Pac-12, win the Rose Bowl, and then go beat Notre Dame. And if they did that, you know, they were nationally relevant. And in between the Howard Jones, John McKay, John Robinson, Pete Carroll eras, USC did that, won the conference, won the Rose Bowl, beat Notre Dame in the same season 18 times, became national titles in 11 of those seasons. And they finished number two in three other seasons, right? So that is the formula at USC, and that's the team that they measure themselves against. But by 1959 or so, they were struggling in their rivalry games. USC had lost to UCLA and Notre Dame for three straight seasons. And although the Trojans tied UW for the conference title, Washington went to the Rose Bowl, and their third-year coach, Don Clark, resigned. He couldn't stand it. The Trojans were set to go on probation for 2 years during this time. So the Trojans hire one of his assistants, John McKay, who only became the greatest coach in USC history in the 20th century. 16 seasons, McKay wins nine conference titles, five Rose Bowls, four national titles. Even today, the 1972 USC team is considered one of the greatest teams of all time. So in 1976, he leaves to coach the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and his offensive coordinator, a guy named John Robinson, takes over at USC, wins three more conference titles in the next four seasons and another national title. Okay? So in those two decades, five national titles, right? 12 conference titles. USC cemented its status as a blue blood of college football, becomes a juggernaut on the West Coast, right? Obviously our listeners are much more kind of aware of the Pete Carroll era at USC, so I'm not going to go into it a lot, but just listen to this. From 2002 to 2008, the Trojans won the Pac-10 or a share in each of those seven seasons in a row, won four Rose Bowls, two Orange Bowls, and the only bowl game they lost during that time was the greatest game ever against the Vince Young Texas Longhorns. So as Lofa Tatupu mentioned in our last week's show, they split a national title with LSU in 03. They were consensus national champions in 04. They were runners-up in 05. They finished in the top four, and yes, they beat Notre Dame in each of those seven seasons. So that's an amazing run. That may be the new peak of the Trojans program, right?
Oh, that 04 team is
legendary. Yeah. Blue bloods of college football, though, become blue bloods because of what they do over the course of decades, not just a good run here or there, right? USC, since joining the PCC in 1922, 37 conference titles in 101 seasons, 34 Rose Bowls, winning 25 of them. No other team has won even 10. 524 players drafted in the NFL, just one player behind Notre Dame for second all time. They could pass them this year. 11 national titles, tied with Michigan and Notre Dame for second behind only Alabama. 7 Heisman Trophy winners, tied with three other schools for the most of all time. And they have a winning record against every team in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, except for some reason Michigan State. They're only 4-4. The only FBS schools to have a winning record over the Trojans, having played more than a handful of times, Alabama, 6-2, and Notre Dame at 51-38-5 ties. So Lofotutupu told us he wasn't allowed to root for Notre Dame. You see why? No one else play is really rivals them, right? So turning the Huskies, with Washington's win on Saturday, UW has won just 31 of the 85 games in the history of these two teams. But they are one of just five teams to have won 30 or more against USC. Notre Dame, as I mentioned, UCLA, Cal, Stanford. But UW's winning percentage is the third in the Pac-12 behind UCLA and, yes, Utah. So I want to go into a couple of these memorable matchups over the years with the rivalry. It's going to continue in the Big Ten next year. 1944, these teams actually met in the Rose Bowl during World War II because of travel restrictions in the U.S. So UW had the lead in the all-time series, but going into that game, USC won 29-0 and never looked back. 1959, UW was undefeated. The Trojans handed UW its only loss of the season, probably costing the Huskies a national title in 1959. Then in 1960, UW comes out and wins 34-0 in the Coliseum. This was their biggest win ever in the series at that time, and the most points they had ever scored against the Trojans before Saturday. 1981, monsoon-like conditions at Husky Stadium, 60-mile-per-hour winds. Huskies took a precarious 6-3 lead in the fourth quarter on a Chuck Nelson field goal. On the ensuing kickoff, it bounces away from the Trojan return man. UW recovers in the end zone, clinching it to win 13-3 at home. That paved the way for UW to go to the Rose Bowl. 1984, UW had won three straight over the Trojans. They were 9-0 heading into the game. USC handed UW its only loss of the season, another one that probably cost the Huskies a national championship. Then, of course, 1990, all I saw was purple. USC was coming off three straight conference titles. They had just won the Rose Bowl. And this was the announcement game that Don James was here and a new force to be reckoned with, right? 91, they were 8-0, looking for just their fifth win in the Coliseum since World War II. They had been 4-19 in L.A. since World War II. But the Huskies pulled it out 14-3 to stay undefeated. 95, Keyshawn Johnson with the game-tying touchdown. That one sent the Trojans to the Rose Bowl. Crucial loss for Jim Lambright. Then you guys all remember 2009, Eric Folk's late field goal defeating third-ranked USC, as I just mentioned, coming off of the top four in the polls for seven straight years when Eric Folk hit that field goal. And then 2016, Huskies were 9-0, college game day. Sam Darnold leads USC. You remember that one? And then, obviously, Saturday night, Huskies scored 52 points, the most ever by a UW team against the Trojans. Already had broken their previous record by halftime. The Huskies are now 5 of the last 8 in the series, guys, going into the Big Ten.
Oof. And what a win it was to head off. And this last season as Pac-12 rivals, every single win, whether it's the one against Oregon, whether it's the one against SC, punctuates this last year as Pac-12. And, hey, we'll see you in the Big Ten. We're going to come in with this on our back. Well, that was great. Absolutely a great, great synopsis from a program that you have to give your props to. But, hey, coming out on top. Feels good, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Feels real
sure good. Sure does.
Hey, let's turn the page, guys. Should we get into, because we got another one this week. I mean, if we're going to go 10-0, this team to keep rolling, it's Utah. So this Saturday, 12:30 on Big Fox, we're hosting Utah. And, you know, this is 7-2, two-time defending Pac-12 champs, number 18 of the CFP. Utah has relished in the Pac-12 with winger records against everybody except UW and Oregon.
Isn't that crazy?
That is absolutely nuts. I mean, I keep saying these guys are going to completely, completely dominate when they get into the Pac-12. When they get into the Big 12. UW is 7-2, 4-0 when ranked, and 3-2 when unranked against Utah. But hey, why listen to us? Let's hear from our man, Cameron, Big Cam, from the Utah Man podcast with his preview. Let's hear about these guys. Here we go.
Hey, Doug Pod, it's Cameron from the Utah Man podcast. Giving a little update on the Utah Utes as they travel to Seattle to take on your Washington Huskies. From an injury standpoint, first and foremost, Cam Rising, Brant Keithy out this entire season, which has been a big blow to this Utah offense. We look at injuries for this week. Probably the number one starting out for me is Jaquitin Jackson, starting running back. Really been their shining star on offense all season long, but he has been hampered by an ankle injury. Missed the Oregon State game a few weeks ago. We saw how bad Utah's offense was in that game. He re-aggravated that injury this past week against ASU on a touchdown run. So I believe he is questionable against the Huskies this weekend. On the defensive side of the ball, a couple weeks ago, they lost Landar Barton, one of their leading tacklers, one of their leaders on that defense. We saw how bad they needed that against Oregon. It looks like they regrouped and did a lot better defensively against Arizona State. But we'll continue to see how Utah kind of manages their middle linebackers with Barton out. When looking at the key matchup for this game, I've got to go with Utah defensive line against Washington's offensive line. Now, Kyle Whittingham said in his Monday presser that this was the best offensive line that Utah has played thus far this season, coming up against the Huskies. Jonah Ellis, defensive end, leads the conference in sacks. Mm-hmm. And really, if Utah wants any shot in this game, they've got to keep that pressure on Penix. If they allow him to stand back there in a clean pocket and just pick him apart, this game will get over very soon. So to me, this all comes down to, can Utah get that pressure on Penix and make him very uncomfortable? Looking forward to this game. It's kind of bittersweet that this is probably the last matchup for some time with the Pac-12 as we know it going away. But that being said, looking forward to Washington, head up to the Big Ten next year. We'll be cheering for you. Hopefully it's a great game this weekend, and go Utes. Hey, Dog Pod, it's Cameron.
What a stud, man. Love that guy. Hey, they were such great hosts to us when we went down there to Salt Lake and we did a live podcast with them. And great show if you're trying to learn. They did a nice pod on Tuesday. I came on and spoke a little bit with them about the matchup that's coming up. But, you know, that's my Big 12 team. That's my Big 12 team.
And absolutely.
They're going to have a path. They are absolutely going to have a path in the Big 12.
Yeah, totally.
100% are.
Yeah, Cameron's been great. I mean, he's been on the pod for like going on 6-7 years now, right? Like, so cool to see that. And, you know, this is one thing where, like, it's going to be interesting. Now we have all of these connections in these different conferences because, heck yeah, I'm going to root for Utah in the Big 12 for sure.
I'd love to see him go through. And, you know, and Cameron and I talked about this on the Utah Man podcast, but if this thing comes down to a super conference at some point, and obviously they and probably Colorado and other makes sense in a big, you know, a Big Ten super conference thing that may come together. But look, you know, we're 7-2 against Utah. Have our Pac-10 championship, our Pac-12 championship win against them. But this team is no joke. This is one that we don't want to sleep on. I don't think the team will either. I think this is a defense that can give us fits. You know, if we think the ASU team was able to gash us up the middle and create problems for Penix, this defensive line can do the same. Whittingham's going to have them ready. And they like to play ball control. They like to play it in a low scoring game, and keep the ball out of our offense's hands. You know, this is one in which, be ready, guys. Be ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, to his point, Utah, 29 sacks. They are tied for 13th in the country with Alabama, right? So they get after you on the defensive line side of things. And the Huskies have allowed only 6 sacks all season. That's second in the conference. So I think that kind of shows you that is going to be a key matchup. And Penix, when he has – I mean, you got to believe they're going to be watching that ASU film, right? They're not going to watch the Trojan film. This isn't how we're going to play you guys, right, 2 down linemen. We're gonna try to shoot that A gap and try to make your life miserable and take our chances because they got good corners. So that's gonna be the matchup to watch. Huskies are gonna have to have some answers on the protection side of things to win this game.
So let's flip it around to the other side too. This is gonna be really interesting. I just don't think Utah has a very good offense. I mean, yes, they put up some points at times, right? Like they put up a lot of points against ASU last week when they scored 55 or something like that in that win. But I just think this is going to be another one of those games where if the Dogs pull it out, their defense is going to play an interesting role in my mind. They don't have a lot of playmakers on the receiving side. They really should pressure the quarterback. It's supposed to be kind of rainy. If they're running back, Utah's running back really is having issues. Their safety sometimes is slotted back there too. The big two-way player, right? You know, with better stats than Travis Hunter down in Colorado. So I'm just really looking for the defense to have kind of a bounce back game here. I'd love to see the D-line put pressure on, you know, their quarterback. who was a backup coming into this season, and our linebackers to play fundamentally sound. And then hopefully on the other side of the ball, we just do enough, you know, with a very stout Utah defense, which we know we're going to get, right?
If the Jaquindon Jackson injury is what Cam said, and he doesn't play this week, and they've got to run out that safety, who I think had a great outing, but people have kind of figured out, I hate to say at this point, what are they going to do? And so let's talk about this. Vegas says 9.5 points, 54 is the over under. Vegas wants this thing 32-22. Quick picks. What do you say?
I'm taking the Huskies. We got them at home. I think we're rolling. I think the team is, you know, they know what's at stake here. And I think to Mitch's point, I don't care for this Utah offense. I think Braylon Trice is coming off two games where he's had pretty, you know, great performances, but hasn't totally been able to get home all the time. I think that changes on Saturday. And I'm going to say the Huskies disrupt Barnes quite a bit. And I think I'm calling it for the Huskies to cover.
I like it, Law Dog. That spread sounds about right. It feels right. And I could very well see the Huskies covering this game. I like it. I'm going to take the Huskies. I think they're starting to peak. I think something happened at that USC game, and guys, they're going to start rolling. And
love
on Saturday, this is going to be another feather. Right? Call in the cap.
I love it.
We haven't even talked about the broad strokes of the schedule, right? But you're coming into Oregon State after this, which has even more sacks than Utah. And then you've got the Cougs. And you saw what happened the Bedlam game, right? Rivals who are getting left behind are coming to play. So this is going to be a brutal stretch. I hope Mitch is right.
Yeah, I would agree. Lodog, we'll get into that, but the Cougs are no cowpokes at this point in the season right now. The cowpokes actually control their own destiny to the championship. But we'll get into that. But I think this week, you're calling me 30.
Hold on, BT.
Yeah.
I think the Cougs are cow pies, not cowpokes.
Zing.
Got them. This team, 32-22, that's too low. That's too low. I think we're up in the high 30s, you know, at this. And maybe Utah's got a little bit more firepower against our secondary. I'm not sure. Maybe they could. But, you know, give me the Dogs. I hate to all be on the same page, but we are. Give me the Dogs to cover. Hey, before we get into the rest of our predictions for this week, let's talk about last week. Lada, give me a quick synopsis of actually, you know what? Let me go through these picks, and then you give me a quick synopsis of how we are, because we got some interesting movement here in the Pac-12 roundup. 11 a.m. It was 2-6 ASU at number 18, 6-2 Utah. Utah was an 11-point favorite. They would win and cover big, 55-3. ASU's worst loss in Pac-12 history. Ooh. ASU was playing without its four offensive tackles, and hey, Trenton Bourgeot goes down with the leg injury. On his first possession, the backup quarterback combined for 13 yards in the first half. The backup quarterback goes down. In the end, it was, guess who, you know, who's quarterback for them? Their fifth string quarterback, my fantasy football running back, Cam Scadabo, is back there under
center. No.
I mean, this is where ASU was at this point. The wheels completely fell off, but I hate to say, you watch that and think, yikes, Utah's coming down. So, hey, they cover big. Cal at Oregon. Boy, the Ducks. The Ducks were a 23.5-point favorite at home. Ducks win and cover 63-19. Started off a little shaky, man. Nix gets picked off on the very first play. You know, they were only, Ducks were only up 14-13 in the first quarter. But then, you know, torrential downpour. It just, everything starts going their way. The Ducks roll 63-19 over Cal. 6 p.m., Stanford at Wazoo. Cougs were the 13-point favorite. Wazoo loses its fifth straight, 10-7. Against the Cardinal. Stanford had lost five straight to Wazoo coming into this. Wazoo down Nakia Watson onto its third string running back. Look, they are a mess, a complete mess right now. 10-7, Stanford gets that win. And we thought we were going to have like these 0-4 teams. It was going to be ASU or Stanford, and neither one of them. They're both finding ways to actually get plucky and pick off a win or two here and there. 7 p.m., Oregon State at Colorado. Beavs were the 13-point favorite. They would win, but closer than we thought, 26-19 for the Beavs. They hold Shedeur Sanders in check, but hey, head scratcher, man. New play caller, Pat Schumer, on the first half, 20 seconds left, he calls two pass plays from the 20. They get stuffed on a run. They have to punt. They give up a 28-yard return plus penalties with 20 seconds left. DJ Ongalele finds Deshaun Fenwick for a touchdown. And I mean, just nuts. Like, what are you doing? And that was one where, you know, a prime time is out talking. Like, we made a mistake right there. 20-3 at half. Shedeur Sanders with only 21 yards in that half. They made a valiant comeback, but it wasn't enough. 26-19 for the Beavs. The last game of the night, 6-2 UCLA at 5-3 Arizona. And boy, we learned at the USC tailgate, not a fan of UCLA. Really not a fan. Boy, they do not like the Bruins. Bruins were a 2.5-point favorite. Wrong team favored. 27-10 Wildcats in Tucson. Fafita with 300 yards and 3 TDs. And can you believe it? We're going to talk about it. Arizona Wildcats ranked in the CFP. Here they go. So a lot of get before we make our predictions for this week. Where are we?
All right. Well, we're definitely picking up the pace after a rough couple of first weeks. Yours truly actually 9-3 over the last 2 weeks. But BT, you are 8-4 during that stretch. So I am just one game back of the lead. Mitch, you are 5 back of the lead. Still probably enough time to put a dent in that one. But the only game I didn't get last week, you'll never guess. It's the Trojans.
That's right. All you suckers.
I can't pick the Trojans. I can't pick the Trojans. So so BT, but we all had Utah. We all had Arizona. We called it wrong team favored. So we're definitely picking up the pace down the stretch.
All right, here we go. So, hey, this week, and how'd our buddy Lofa do? Professional football player, last time I checked. How do you do with us?
Well, you know, it depends on how you want to grade him on the caveat he had with Cal, but I've got him, I've got him at 2-4 with the Cal pick on an asterisk, and he missed that one.
Hey, you know, keep your money, but Lofa, we'll have you on any time that you'll join the podcast, man. That was a great episode. So here we go. This week, man, this is a big one. We start with the CFP ranked number 21, 6-3 Arizona Wildcats at 4-5 Colorado on Pac-12 networks. Starting off that early game, Wildcats are the 10.5-point favorite.
Give me the Wildcats. I'm going to keep riding them. They're rolling right now. I think, yeah, it's a road test, but the Buffaloes are just having a lot of issues, guys. And, you know, there's a lot of new players. That's a new locker room. And Arizona's really picking up steam. I like the Wildcats.
Yeah, boy. You kind of thought maybe you'd get another shot at getting them on a good line here. But it looks like Vegas has figured it out. I hate to pick them to cover this one on the road. I'm going to. Even though I've been whiffing on Colorado, I did catch a backdoor cover last week. So I'll stick with the Buffs on the backdoor cover.
This is your chance to pick up even on me, Law Dog. I'm with Mitch on this. I just don't see it. And this Arizona team, the way they're putting together their offense, I think they're doing just enough. I know that, you know, CU has to win a couple here to get bowl eligible. And this is the team that, look at what they did in the first 4 weeks. We were talking about bowl eligibility. And we were talking about, wow, I mean, this is a, you know, top 15, whatever they think their highest ranking was. But this is tough for them. Give me the Wildcats on this one. I like them at least by 2 touchdowns. Here we go. A couple of teams that need a win big time. 4-5 Wazoo at 3-6 Cal. 1 p.m. on ESPN2. Can you believe it? The Bears are favored by 1.
Give me the Bears.
I'm going to take Cal.
I am all out on the Cougs. I mean, it was a nice story at the beginning of the year, but let's face it, 7 points against Stanford at home. That tells me everything I need to know.
And they've been tanking me for the last like 4 weeks in a row. I keep taking them. Guess what? I'm getting off the Cougs. You know, the other bizarre thing too was, you know, Dicker came out this week and was really complaining about the NIL thing, which is legitimate and for a lot of reasons on how brutal it is for the Cougs. But he wasn't complaining about it when they were 4-0 early on in the season, right? And so, like, I get it for next year, dude, but, like, you can't really pin it on NIL looming on you on why you've just dropped how many in a row? 5? 6 games?
Well, he's talking about open season on his players, and he's right. It is going to be that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be open season. And not only from a, hey, here's what we can offer you from an NIL perspective, but you sure you want to finish out your career there? We don't even know what conference you're going to be in. Things don't look good for you. And anyone that's worth their while there, you know, it's going to be open season on his players. I mean, I get it, but you're right. It was interesting timing for sure. This one's tough, guys. I would love to be on the other side of this thing, but I just can't do it. You know, I don't see it. I think they've got the right team picked here, and I think one Maybe you're going to entice me with 3.5, but no way. Give me Cal on this one. Next, 2:30 on Pac-12 Network. It's 3-6 Stanford at number 12, 7-2 Oregon State Beavers, a 21-point favorite at home in Corvallis. I'm going to come out first on this one, guys, so you guys don't have to go opposite of me. This one, I like the Beavers. That line is way too big for me for the Beavs. 21, I don't like it. Give me Stanford to cover on this.
I agree.
No, I agree. That's where I was going to. They're a little pluckier than we thought.
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe
yep.
Not that
pluckier. And you know,
a little.
And that this goes back, like, Huskies get all this grief for it being a close game, but look at what Stanford's done, right? After that game, they've gone on a little run here, guys. And so, like, that's too many. It's too many points, I think. Yeah. I'm with you, BT.
It's a lot, for particularly for a team that isn't, you know, isn't blowing out teams, but is controlling the ball well enough to win. And Oregon State, look, keep doing what they're doing, and they're going to be in a good spot. 6 hey, p.m.
Don't
on
forget,
Pac-12.
Don't forget, the Cardinal took Arizona down to the wire. They only lost 21-20 back in September. So, you know, some of these games are going to start looking a little better.
They are. They sure are. Absolutely. Hey, 6 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. It's ASU 2-7 ASU at 6-3 UCLA. Bruins, the 18-point favorite in the Rose Bowl.
I feel like this is Chip Kelly. He's just like, he beats up on bad teams. I mean, that's like his hallmark, you know? And so I feel like they are going to take, I think they're going to get a lot of this one. I'm going to take the Bruins. I think this pass rush is way too much for ASU, and who knows what their quarterback situation is. Going with the Bruins.
Yeah. I mean, gosh darn it. I hate to do this because we're all picking kind of similarly this week. Who do they have at quarterback, right? Like, they're going to have like a IMA person
go
out there. Walk on tryouts, right? Where's Rudy? Rudiger, get him out there. They're just so depleted at this point in time. And you got to think they've gone through so much mental challenges this year. No bull band, you know, bull band thing and all that kind of stuff. I'll take UCLA.
I feel like they got those lines wrong, right? Like Stanford in Oregon State, that seems like the 18 point or less one for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, this one should be larger, you know, this isn't the place we're going to create separation, guys. I'm sorry. Give me UCLA on this one as well. The late game, it's 7:30 on Fox, 7-3 USC at 8-1 Oregon. There will be a lot of USC fans in Seattle. Ducks, the 15-point favorite.
Boy, 15 is a lot, but Oregon, and here's, we haven't talked a lot about Oregon. The hype train is back. It's back on the tracks. And all we hear about is Oregon, Oregon, Oregon. It's almost like we didn't beat them in Seattle a few weeks ago.
If only we'd played to settle it on the field.
If only we played to settle the debate on who was better, right? But it turns out nobody actually saw the game, apparently. But I do feel like SC, I can't pick them. I just cannot pick them. So I'm going to take the Ducks out of just pure just guesswork here.
Gosh darn it, Law Dog, you're killing me here. I agree. I think Oregon's going to run all over SC. They really are, right? Like, I mean, Dylan Johnson didn't get touched, guys. He had, 196 yards before contact? and the Ducks are deeper at running back than we are. Let's just be straight up about it. Check down Nix is going to do what he needs to do, and they're going to cover 15. It's going to get ugly, I think.
I don't think SC is going to play as deep and off the line, two down linemen. I think they're going to adjust. They're going to have a new defensive coordinator this week, obviously, right? So I think there's reasons to think that Oregon will kind of get a little bit different look from SC, but I do agree. I mean, the Ducks, I think, are the more complete team. They're the better team. They'll win.
I think they're going to win, but I'll take the other side of this. I like SC to cover. I like this thing to get a little bit closer. It's a 9 or a 10-point win. I like them better with a new defensive coordinator that comes in. I mean, you could see, like, even that clip, I don't know if you guys saw that, where at the end Alex Grinch is, like, getting his team together for a high five and just
gets and he puts his hand up.
Walked away from him. Everyone's given up on him. And I'd rather, I hate to say it, but, like, give me no DC. Just let these guys, these talent that they have out there, just go run. And I think this is one that we saw with Cam Williams, of like, he's got no quit, man. He's got absolutely no quit. And this is a game where I think he's going to want to come in and put up some points. Now, will the defense be able to control Oregon and get the ball back? I don't know. You know, if you give me, I think this is like closer to a 9 or a 10, like a comfortable win, but I don't think this is 18-21.
That is totally fair. And what I will say is SC at 5-2, they are still hanging around this conference race, right? Arizona, Utah, Oregon State. They all have 2 losses. Oregon has 1. You could see Oregon maybe losing to the Beavers. And if you get into a 5-way tie or a 4-way, a really messy 4-way tie, you never know. You never know. I mean, SC has, you know, they have some decent wins this year. They beat Arizona. I guess that's kind of their only decent win, but they beat Colorado anyway.
When Colorado was rolling early on in the season, if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, how classic Pac-12 would this be, though, if SC wins?
Four-way
this game?
Tie. Four-way tie.
Right? It's just a bunch of weirdness. Come on. Look, a lot of teams, and this is where teams really need to buckle up, because they do. I mean, after next week, I think things are going to really settle out, where it's going to be just a handful of teams who have left, you know, have left a glimmer of hope. But this is the one. Would love to see SC. Our buddy now, Roy, USC Psycho, is going to be up there in Eugene. Enjoy the fans. I know he's already made some comments to us about them, and it's going to have a real great time up in Eugene cheering for them. But hey, you know, we're going to be, for the rest of us in the dog pad, ready for the Utah fans. Let's welcome them and show them that the respect that they showed us in Salt Lake City. But let's get that freaking win. Let's get that convincing-ass win on Saturday, 12:30, Husky Stadium.
Huskies have not been 10-0 since 1991, guys. This is it.
Wow. This is the week, man. This is the week to go get it. Hey, this is going to be fun. We had a blast in SC. Let's keep this damn train rolling and enjoy it, because you never know when it's going to happen again. Can I get a go, Dogs?
Go, Dogs.
Go, Dogs.
Oof. Let's do it.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Washington State University.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.